some demonstration stuff here. And the unique thing about TriQuint compared to other semiconductor companies is the materials that we use in our semiconductor. Mm-hmm. And just as a touchy-feely demo, I have two wafers here that you can hold in your hands. One is a silicon wafer and one is a gallium arsenide wafer. You can notice there's a difference in weight.
Definitely a difference.
And so it feels like one is thicker than the other, but they're both the exact same thickness.
Yeah, because this feels thinner to me.
Yeah, but it's not.
Huh.
So the heavy one is gallium arsenide, and then the light one is silicon. So silicon is what everybody else uses, like Intel and other companies that build semiconductors, but we use a compound that's gallium and arsenic. Gallium's an interesting metal because if you could hold this in your hand, it would actually melt.
Oh.
So it melts at body temperature, about 35°C it melts. And so on the periodic table, gallium is in the third column and arsenic's in the fifth column.
Mm-hmm.
And so TriQuint's name came from those columns. TriQuint.
Okay.
And so that means gallium arsenide to us as being a 3-5 compound. That's what they call it, 3-5. And so that's where our name comes from, and that's what we were building, and we continue to build 3-5 compounds and other, we use a lot of other materials, you know, from this area of the periodic table. So all the ones that are not shaded here are materials that we use in our company to mm-hmm. make semiconductors. So you might wonder, why do we use gallium and arsenic instead of silicon like everybody else?
Right.
And the reason is because compound semiconductor, like gallium arsenide, the electrons move faster. Mm-hmm. They actually, in gallium arsenide, they move about 5 times faster than silicon.
Okay.
So for certain applications, it's much better performance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So most of those applications are things that we call analog or RF. So things that you would call wireless
okay.
are things that work really well in our material compared to silicon. So we have that advantage that we can make those kinds of things easier than the silicon folks can. The way they compensate and the way they build more circuitry is by shrinking, right? So they shrink, you know, they're on a cadence of shrinking, you know, like 30% every 2 years. So everything gets smaller and smaller and smaller. For us, we don't do that. We're the same size as we were 25 years ago because our material is already fast enough that it's still better than even really small silicon stuff. So that's kind of the difference between us. But we can't make like microprocessors mm-hmm. or memories or things that require a whole lot of transistors. We make things that just use a few transistors, mostly, again, analog stuff like amplifiers. So when your phone makes a call and you connect to a base station, that's through a TriQuint part. So the part that actually transmit through the air are the parts that we build. But we don't build, like I said, we don't build microprocessors or displays or memories or any of those other things that's in your phone. But just the part that sends, and in some cases we also have the part that receives, or the part that will actually talk to wireless LAN instead of to the base station. So if you're surfing the web in Starbucks, that would also be through a TriQuint part. So that's the material we start with, and so they would take gallium and arsenic and put it together and melt it under really high pressure mm-hmm. in a big pot, and then they take a, I actually have a picture, they would take a seed crystal and dunk it down into that pot of molten material and then pull it out and make this thing that's called a boule. So you start off and you have this molten material and you have a little seed crystal that's on this puller, and usually it's rotated in one direction, and actually the pot of melted junk is rotating in the opposite direction. And so they dunk that down in and they start pulling it out. And the slower you pull it, the bigger this gets. And so you can make different sizes. And it's pretty heavy if you want to lift it. So for gallium arsenide, they can't make very big ones because they get too heavy and then it just breaks off right there.
Right.
And so, but that's the way it works, is it's a heated mass of metal or semi-metal materials that gets pulled out. And then, of course, once that's done, they polish the sides and then they just slice it off. And that makes, you know, like the thing that you held in your hand a second ago, right? And so we start with those wafers and then we process everything from there on until you get to the final part. And so we have different steps that we would go through in the process. And don't worry, I'm not going to go through all these. I just have it as a, again, as kind of a demonstration where we start off with a wafer, and you can just barely start to see a pattern in there. And so the processes that we do are pretty simple. There's just three kind of types. One is what we call a photo process, where we put a photo-definable material on the wafer, and then we shoot light through a mask like this and make that pattern on the wafer in the photoresist material. And then we either deposit into that pattern or we etch into it. Mm-hmm. So those are the three things: photo, etch, and deposition, kind of just to generalize the kind of steps that we do. And it, in a minute we'll walk down and you can see the place where we do this. But so then we build up different layers, and then we put like a metal down. Mm-hmm. That's the deposition part. And then we'll etch part of it away and make patterns and kind of go through pretty different colors like this and so on and so forth. And then kind of a finished wafer would look pretty much like this. So, but there's all kinds of pretty colored patterns and different things that we use. And the other thing that's different about our process from silicon is that most of our metals are usually gold. Silicon used to use aluminum, now they use copper. We also have some layers that are copper that we do here at the very end, but for most of the connections and things that we make inside of our wafers, they're done with gold. So it's very expensive.
Why right do you now use gold instead of aluminum or copper?
Well, that's a very good question. It's mostly a legacy, I think. I mean, when we first started building structures, gold was the easiest thing for us to use, and there's certain properties about gold that made it very good for the kinds of things that we were doing. So it matched up with our material set, the gallium arsenide. In silicon, gold is not so good. It's actually a kind of a, what would you call it? It's a material that you don't want. It's a fast diffuser. It just doesn't make things work right. For us, it's a kind of material that we want. We could use other materials, and some of our competitors, primarily in Japan, used aluminum for a while, but it didn't work so well. So it really is matched well with what we're trying to build. And because of that, we just got used to it. And so all of our processes are developed around that material. So for us to change it, it would be a pretty big thing.
Right.
Even though it would be a lot cheaper to go to a different material, it still doesn't really match as well as what gold does. So that's kind of my best explanation of that. So anyway, that's the main processing that we do here, as we go through and we work on wafers. And kind of when we get near the end, we're processing these full wafers like the one that you held, but in the end we take them and mount them onto a glass carrier. So that's a wafer that's mounted on a carrier. Mm. Just to show you what the carrier is by itself, this is the carrier. So we put the wafer onto there, and then we actually grind off most of the wafer. We get rid of most of it because all that we want is basically the part that we processed on the very top of the wafer. So the rest is not really useful to us. And we can make the circuits smaller, but also less resistance by getting rid of that material. And so it's kind of a funny thing, but we actually grind off most of what we need. And the reason we need the thickness that I showed you is because gallium arsenide is also a brittle material. Mm. And so breakage is a constant battle for us. So we have to make them a certain thickness in order to keep them from breaking so often. But we don't need that thickness for anything else. So it gets ground off, and I'll show you where that happens too. And then after those steps, we'll take the wafer and mount it onto, after it's thinned, it's really fragile. Mm-hmm. And so we never handle it in a thin mode when it comes off of that carrier. Mm-hmm. We just immediately stick it onto this tape that's a little bit sticky. And then we'll saw it up, we dice it, and then we take the parts off that we need. So each one of these little teeny squares is actually the device that we would use. Mm. And so this one's just partially picked to show, you know, leaving behind the ones that we don't want, that for some reason we've determined those to be not good parts. Mm. And we might go and see how we do that in part of the tour too. So after that, then those individual pieces there get put into a tape like this, which looks like a movie reel.
Right.
And if you look here, you can see these little teeny squares inside of here. Those are those individual die right off of there. So we put them in here, and then we send this tape format to the Far East. So either right now we're using Korea, China, or Malaysia, and they'll take the individual die like this, and our devices kind of are built upon a little circuit board that's like that, that's really thin, and they'll take the die out of the tape, and they'll mount them onto that circuit board. So here's one that's got a few die on it. You want to see that. Hmm. So for these parts in particular, you can see there's three die. There's two small ones and a big one in the middle.
Right.
And that's what's built into the package. After that, then they put plastic on. Mm-hmm. And so it looks like this, just a solid sheet of plastic. After this, then there's another sawing process to individualize these guys. And then they'll look like this once they're cut out. And those parts get put into a different tape, like this. And these are a little bit harder to see because the black side's up, not the gold side. But in this is, starting right after this empty one, are those individual parts that then get shipped to our customers. And so they'll take this tape and then take their phone board. Mm-hmm. And take the part out of the tape and mount it to the board, and then build a phone around it. So these are just different phone boards here.
Wow.
So that's the process.
So you go from a wafer this big to this little tiny thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
And some of these will have, well, like this one has, I believe, four die in it. Mm-hmm. And we have some up to like eight that are even this small, but they have eight little die inside of them. And then we have some that are smaller, you know, little teeny guys like this that just have one die inside of those. So, for example, that's a wireless LAN device right there.
Hmm.
And so that's the process. So all the wafer stuff is done here, and then the final packaging is done offshore. Hmm. And right now we build about 1 million a day.
Wow.
So roughly 1/5 of any cell phone that you would come across would have our parts in them.
Wow.
So mostly our business is focused on smartphones. Mm-hmm. So mostly more smartphones than just regular phones would be having TriQuint parts in them. So that's kind of the short run through. Now I'm just going to do a walkthrough of our fab. We can't go inside, and our business has been so good that we used to have a hallway where you could walk all the way around and you could look in windows and mm-hmm. see a lot of stuff. But we, over the years, about every 2 years, we expanded the fab out, taking up the hallway and the whole building. So now it's mostly solid fab and there's only one little hallway left. But we can go down there and I can show you firsthand what we have. And I don't know how much time you have available.
I have as much time as we need. So.
Well, I don't want to spend too much time on the tour, but you know, there's as another option, we can actually go on to the test floor, so I'm going to take this with me too, just in case you don't get bored. So you might have noticed when we walked up here, I'm going to shut this just so I don't get gawkers, that the second floor here is all offices, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no real production or manufacturing or anything that goes on the second floor, just office space.
Okay.
Let's see. We have so many options with different stairways to go down, but two years after we moved to this site, we added on this part of the building. So we had a square building.
Right.
And then we added on this little wing kind of thing here. But that was right about 2000 when the big market crash happened.
Right.
And so we actually never moved into this building until just about 3 years ago. We started moving into the new section of the office building. So it's been just a pretty steady growth for us, really since the very beginning, but the big growth has just happened in the last 5 years or so when we started mm-hmm. getting more parts into cell phones.
Mm-hmm. So the whole smartphone boom was good for you guys, I guess?
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. Very good for us. But we have a lot of diversity in the company, and over the years, like starting in the early 2000s, we acquired other companies that do the same thing. So
that would be very nice.
In like 2001, we acquired the part of Texas Instruments that did the same thing that we do.
Mm.
It's a real small part.
Right.
This is a really small part, but they built gallium arsenide, and so they were being divested, and we bought them. And so we have another fab in Richardson, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, a company called Infineon, which was a spinoff of Siemens, also decided they wanted to get rid of their gallium arsenide group. We bought them. Before that, AT&T did the same thing. We bought them. So we've kind of been getting parts and pieces. So TriQuint is not only an innovator, but also a consolidator, right?
Right.
So consolidating all these little parts and pieces of other companies that just basically do the same thing as what we do. Mm. And so it's been a long story of those. And part of our business is what they call a foundry. Mm-hmm. And so we basically just build wafers for other companies. So they do their own designs. We just process and fabricate the wafers. And then they take them and test them and build their own products. And so some of those companies that we enabled, we also acquired. And so it's just been constant kind of acquisitions through to help our growth and get us to a mass that's big enough. So this is the hallway that's left that we're walking down here, but it's pretty much all we have to see anymore into the fab. This is the latest build out, was in this corner. We used to be able to walk down all the way down here and look, have a little bit better view. But where I like to start is here. And so if you look, not straight here, but kind of to the right there, mm-hmm. you can start to see a machine. That is one of our deposition machines. So remember I said we do photo etch and deposition. Mm-hmm. And so that machine that you're looking at is, you're actually looking at this, that shiny part that you can just barely see down there,
right.
is one of these things. It's a big pump. And so from the top view, this machine is sitting like this. So the input and output is inside the fab here, and we're kind of looking at the back part, the working part of the machine. And so it has these different chambers in it that hold a target. And so these are the targets of metal that we use to deposit. And so, for example, this is a gold target. Mm-hmm. Costs about $500,000.
Wow.
This is a nickel target. It's much cheaper. But those targets actually sit upside down in the, each one of these chambers. So a wafer comes in here, and this is called the dealer. It'll take the wafer, and it'll shove it into these chambers. And then we do a plasma process that looks like this, if we could see it, where in our case the target's on the top and the wafer's on the bottom, and it strikes a plasma, and that causes the metal to come off the target and deposit on the wafer. And so that's how we accomplish our metal deposition, is in machines like that. And we have about 15 of those machines that have multiple chamber. They're called a cluster tool, and so you can do, we'll put like titanium, tungsten, gold, nickel, platinum, different metals that we use to deposit in each one of those systems. Mm-hmm. So that's how we do the deposition. Hmm. And so the front looks like this, and that's what you can see when you look in here. If you look over to the left, you can see the, that's the business end, right, where they put the wafers in there, and then it pretty much takes over and does the processing of the wafers. And so those black boxes are what we call run boxes, and they usually hold 25 wafers. So they'll open up that box, and they'll take out what we call the cassette, and then they set the cassette in there, and then the robot takes over from there on. So that's what's mostly all the way down, as far as you can see on the left-hand side here, are those metallizers.
Uh-huh.
On the right-hand side, just right here close, is a sink that we use either to clean or sometimes we use sinks to also to deposit metal. And that's what we're going to see in the next tunnel, is a different kind of deposition system. You can't really see the front of the machine here, but we also plate our metals using an electroplating process. So when we want really thick ones, we do that. So it's just like on jewelry and stuff, right, where they plate metal. That's what we do on our wafers. I don't really have a picture of that. But we can talk about it a little bit when we look in over here. Because the fab is laid out so there's areas that are called bays. That's where the people work and the wafers go. And then there's chases. So it's bay, chase, bay, chase. In the bay, the air comes down from the top and goes through filters. And so it's very clean air. It goes through the floor or sometimes through the wall and into the chase, and it goes back up. So the chases are kind of dirty compared to the bays, and that's where all the equipment is. So this is a chase, and there's not usually people in here unless they're maintenance people, and the wafers aren't in here either. The wafers are in the clean part. But on the left-hand side here, you can see kind of a big machine. That is a plating system, and it actually you can plate two wafers at a time, and it holds the wafers upside down, and then it sprays liquid onto the front surface of the wafer while it's making electrical connection, and it'll plate up. That's the way it works. So there's two of those here on the left, and then we have one farther down that you can barely see that does 10 at a time. Mm-hmm. And so those are kind of the two ways that we put metal on, either with a plasma process or a plating process. So got those out of the way here. I'm going to grab my coat and we're going to go look at the rest of the fab as much as we can. Sorry I can't show you more, but this is the front side of the plating system where the fountain heads are inside there. And there's pumps and stuff underneath. But this can do two wafers at a time. And then it plates up what we call thick metal. So the really thick layers. Mm-hmm. So next we're gonna go in here and look at some other areas. So, like I said, used to be the fab was just in the middle, and we actually had like offices and other support rooms around it.
Right.
But now it's filled up the whole building, except for some parts of the right-hand side of here are still support areas and maintenance areas to help them out. And, it's pretty much filled with processing equipment. So, for the last 6 years or so, we've doubled about every 2 years. So
wow.
We're just building everything we could possibly build right now.
All right.
So this area of the fab is a little bit different than the bays and chases that I've described before. We call this the ballroom because it's one big room where the photo process happens. And so like I said before, what we do is we put a material on the wafer, it puts it on there and spins the wafer so it makes a really thin layer of photosensitive material. And that's why we have the yellow lights, is because they don't affect the sensitivity of the photoresist, but different colored light does. And so we have machines that shoot the light through those masks that I showed you before. And the machines look like this. And so we put a cassette of wafers on here, and the machine will automatically take the wafers in there and shoot light through them. These are like the coating tracks that put the coating on. And so it kind of is laid out so that the wafers come in on this side that we're looking at, they get coated, they go through the stepper, and then they get developed on the other end, and they come out and they're finished in this area. And it just has rows and rows. There's like six rows here where the wafers just flow through that way. But that really wasn't enough. And so now that the guys have expanded the photo area, and you can get a little bit better view if you look in here of some of those tools, because this is kind of an extension of the photo area. We have a couple more steppers here where they're working on those. That's pretty much the story for the fab. Mm-hmm. This actually used to be the entrance to the fab was right here. Mm-hmm. So we would come in and out here, and we didn't want to use up that space as an entrance, so we built on a little building that's out here. And now so the change room, we call it, is over here. So this is actually kind of an addition to the fab that's new. And so you can see they have different colors of bunny suits that they wear inside there. Most of the operators all wear white, and then the maintenance and engineers wear the dark blue.
Mm-hmm.
There are some light blue. Those are usually worn by the supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ones that wear all different colors mixed up, those are the anarchists. So we sometimes have all different types, but usually they kind of stick to those colors.
And is that to protect the wafers or to protect them from chemicals?
The suits are to protect the wafers from people.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Because people are a source of contamination and particles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to keep it really clean and keep down those kind of particles and stuff. So people that work in here, for example, they can't wear makeup.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we allow smokers, even if they're, you know, they can't smoke, obviously, but they can't even be smokers and still work in here because, you know, they emit extra particles from that. So those kind of things. So we try to keep it really clean.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much the fab. Do you have any questions?
How many people work in fab compared to upstairs in the
morning? It's not quite a half. It's more closer probably to a third. So I said we have about 1,000, so there's like 350 or so people, I think, maybe 400 at max that work in here, and it's across four shifts.
Mm.
So they work, the fab is running 24/7.
Wow.
So people work a 12-hour shift. So they start at 6:30 in the morning and go till 6:30 at night, or start at 6:30 at night and go till 6:30 in the morning. And what they do is they work 4 days 1 week, and then 3 days the next week.
Mm.
So they have a swing day. So they get an extra long weekend on some weeks and then not on others. So it's a 4 day, 3 day, 4 day, 3 day kind of a situation for that. And then the swing days are different days. Some swing days are in Wednesdays and some are Sundays. And so the shifts overlap with each other. So day one will overlap with night one and night two, and then vice versa. So they see all the, basically they never see the other day shift, but they see both night shifts because of the way they split up the times.
Mm.
So some people just really thrive and they love that kind of a schedule because they get 3 day and 4 day weekends, right? But it's hard. It's a really hard schedule. I know that I couldn't do it, but some people just love it. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it just fits exactly what they want and works out. But we usually have to hire two or three people to find that one person that likes it. But like I said, some people just really thrive with that kind of a work schedule, and those are the people that we're after.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the people in here, college degrees not required, that work in here. So the production folks mostly are just high school degree, or, you know, there are quite a few that have college degrees and so on, but it's not a requirement for those people.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
No, I think that was it.
Okay. So next we're going to see the area where we grind off the back.
Okay.
And call this the fab finish area. That was the fab. And so this is what we do at the very end of the wafer processing. In between, we do a lot of testing. We test wafers all different ways that we can think of. And then after they're tested, then they come back to the fab finish, which is this room right here. And so if you look halfway down there and farther, there's three machines on the left that are shorter. Those are the grinders. So those grind off, you know, like 95% of the wafer. We just need the top part is all we want. All the other machines in this room that you can see at least are for dicing up the individual parts on the wafer. So there's two machines here on the left and one on the right that are lasers. And you can actually watch the second one there as it's moving along the wafer. Mm-hmm. And it shows a cartoon of the wafer on the right, and then it shows you actually what it's looking at as it's cutting the those things apart. And so it's very fast. These other littler machines that you can see that guy's standing at right there are mechanical saws. So they actually have a little saw blade in them with diamonds in it, and we actually mechanically saw the wafers. They're slower, but we do both for different reasons, but we do both mechanical sawing and laser dicing. And so we have the three machines you can see here, and then there's a fourth one that's on the other side we'll see in a second. But you can see already the progress that it's made on that wafer, right? There's only about a quarter left now that's yet to be sawn up. And so it will finish pretty quickly. And sometimes the mechanical saws will take, you know, 10 hours to cut a wafer.
Wow.
So we do those both ways. But so this is called fab finish here. We can get a little bit different view into fab finish as we go around the corner here. Okay, are we doing okay? So this is just a different view where you can actually see straight down there is one of the mechanical saws that we use to cut up the wafers. And then here on the right is another laser saw. Uh-huh. We actually just put that one in over the Christmas break. So we're filling up space pretty rapidly and running out of space. So,
are there plans to expand the building more, or?
No, what we have chosen to do, because we have a much larger fab in Texas,
right?
We actually bought a fab building from Micron Technology down there, and we moved those folks that we acquired from Texas Instruments into that. But it's probably six times bigger than our fab here. And they just occupied a small part of it, so we said, well, if we're going to need more capacity, we'll just build it there. And so we've spent basically the last year doing that, and so now they have exactly the same equipment that we have here and the exact same processes. So we can build identical wafers there that we can build here. And so we're still trying to cram more in here, but we're using those guys as our increased capacity. Another way that we increased capacity was we actually moved the very last fabrication steps into this room right here called the copper room. And so this is the place where we plate copper and tin on the wafers at the very end, right inside this room. And so if you look in there, you can see these sinks. And if we could go in, inside the sink is a chemical called copper sulfate. It's really fun because it's really pretty blue liquid. And so we put the wafers on the board and we attach electrodes in and we dunk them down in there and then we plate up copper. And we make the connections that we use on the die out of that copper, and then at the very end we plate up a little bit of tin, which acts like solder. So they can take our individual die and put them on circuit boards and just solder them on. So it's kind of a new thing for TriQuint to be able to do that, because before we would have to use little gold wires to connect our device. It's called wire bonding. But now we also have this process, which is really good for us. So, are we doing okay?
Yeah, we're
take another 15 minutes?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, because I'd like to take you into the test floor. So we're going to go this way.
Okay.
This is kind of fun because you can actually see a lot of things happening here. But to go on the test floor, we have to put on these smocks.
Okay.
So I'm going to see if I can find one that might work for you. Okay. You want to hang up your coat here?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Like it's going to work for you?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Okay. So the other thing we have to do is we actually have to put on these heel straps, and I've already got mine on here. And so you're going to put this on to your heel such that this rubber part is underneath your foot, and this is on the back of your heel, and then this is Velcro to go around your ankle.
Okay.
And then this part has to go in underneath your foot or sometimes even underneath your sock. Because
okay.
What we're trying to do is make electrical contact to you. And then we have a floor here that's conductive, so it will take all the charge off of you.
Okay.
So that you can't harm anything that's in here. Not that you're going to touch anything, but it's our process that we have to use. The way we test to make sure that you're okay, everybody has to do this. Get all buttoned up here. And then you stand on the foot that's got the apparatus you put on here, and then you push this button and hold it down.
Uh-huh.
See where it says pass? Means I'm okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Perfect.
Passed.
Good to go. So this is what we call the test floor, and what we do here mostly is test wafers. And so what we're doing in that case is we're testing the individual part that's on a wafer to do the best we can to make sure, and I don't know if you're going to be able to hear me in here, it's kind of noisy, but do the best we can to make sure that that individual part is going to work for our customer. Now we have another test at the very end after everything's all put together in those little plastic things that I showed you when it's individual.
Right.
And that tests the complete functionality. So we have another test that we do later, but this is just so that we can get only the good parts off of the wafer and finish the rest of the process. We don't want to waste money on bad ones, right?
Right.
And so what we do is the measurements on the wafers, and in this row over here that's kind of busy, they are actually measuring wafers as part of the fabrication process. And what that means is, where we saw them working on the wafers, they'll bring wafers out here and make sure that everything is okay. And all these systems around here, they're probing the wafers, but they're actually only measuring these individual spots. See these ones that are different here?
Right.
So there's 9 of those on a wafer, and they'll only measure those. They don't measure all the rest of the things. So they're just measuring to make sure that the fab is going okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like an interim measure. So they'll just measure those 9 sites on every single wafer during the fabrication process to make sure it looks good. And then when they finish, they make one final measurement and say, yeah, this wafer is as good as we can process.
And they do that for every single wafer?
Yes.
So 1 million a day, isn't that what you said?
1 million of these little teeny guys
there
a day, right?
Okay.
So on a wafer, there's about 20,000.
Wow, it's still a lot.
So it takes about 50 wafers to make 1 million.
Okay.
That's not so many.
Okay.
Right? So after the wafer is finished and the fab guys are done,
mm-hmm.
then it comes to a different machine. Thank you.
but it marks green. So all the ones that aren't good, it marks as red. And so that's called a wafer map, and we have that data that tells us which are good and which are bad. So we can use that data after we've singulated the dye, and when we pick them off, we only pick the good ones, and we leave the bad ones behind. So all these machines, even though it's a little bit hard to tell, all these along here, along that row, are all doing this kind of stuff here. So here's one that's in progress, right?
Okay.
And so if you stand here and watch, you can see the green lines get built across there. And then some of these other ones, it's actually probing multiple dye. So we can probe sometimes up to like 8 at a time. So it's got these little, they're kind of like needles that land on the dye, and then we can bias it up and say that that's okay. So this is doing the same thing, it just doesn't have the color there, and so it's just a little bit different mode. But if you watch closely, I lost where it was just going across here. It's probably on, here we go, there. Going to go across. And so this looks like it's measuring 4 dye at a time. And then it's going to go off out of our, now it's going to go across. So we can see it. So it's just probing and measuring the dye. So we get that map that tells us good ones and bad ones. And then we'll take the wafer back into fab finish, grind off the back, and saw it all up so they're individualized. And then the wafer comes to these machines in the middle. These are really fun. They're like my favorite ones. What these machines do is they'll look at a wafer. It's on a piece of tape like that, like I showed you before. You're in a flexible tape. If you look down in there, you can see that it's doing this stuff. So there we go. It's got different colored lights.
Yeah.
And it's actually inspecting and looking at the individual dye. And so this is actually the back side of the dye that's being placed into the tape.
Oh.
So you have that black tape that I showed you. Those are the pockets in the tape. And see, it's going across here, picking out the good dye, and then it looks at them, makes an inspection. It's looking at all different aspects to make sure it's okay. If anything's wrong, like there's a chip like that, it'll throw it out. And so as it goes across, you can see it left behind the bad ones. It doesn't even bother with those, because it knows from those other machines which are good and which are bad. So it's taking this individual dye, putting them in the tape. Tape's over here. Right? So these are kind of long, skinny dyes. So if you look, those are the same shape as what we were seeing in the picture. So it inspects. It inspects the front side where it's got these copper bumps that we saw. So it makes sure all the bumps are there and everything looks appropriate like it's supposed to. That's the pattern. And then it also looks at the backside for chips or cracks or dirty spots or anything like that. So it makes multiple inspections on the wafer. But if you stand back and look, it almost looks like it's a fire, right?
Yeah.
So we have kind of a nickname for these machines. We call them the barbecues. Because they look like a barbecue.
Yeah.
There, right?
They do.
Just a funny shape like that, and so it's really interesting. So, see that? In that screen, you can actually see the front side.
Uh-huh.
You can see that it's looking at the bumps and making sure that everything's good. So, we could do that here if I was smart enough to figure out how to run this, but it's just set up and going. And see, you can see all the different various dyes, shapes, and sizes that we're looking at here. And usually when the light is red, it either means that it's finished with the wafer or that something's wrong. It's either out of tape or, you know, it came across a problem it didn't know what to do with it or whatever. But the green lights are good. That means that they're going pretty fast. You can see it's putting a lot of dye in these tapes. And then that's what gets sent to the assembly guys, right?
And that's all automated. Nobody needs to stand here and
only to put on new ones, right?
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty automated. Not as much as we'd like, but this is pretty good right here.
Yeah.
Usually there's a few more red splashing, but again, it doesn't necessarily mean bad. It just might mean that it needs attention, right? It's ready to change out or make a change. So it's going pretty fast.
Yeah.
And, making all those inspections. And this is it seems like a lot of extra work, but what we want to do is we want to make sure that every die that goes in there is good.
Right.
Because, as you saw, we'll put multiple die inside of an individual part. If one of them's bad, the whole thing has to be thrown away. So there's no going back, right? So everyone needs to be good. And so we can get really good yield by making sure that the die are all good. Like I said, these are kind of fun to watch.
Yeah.
Now, the last thing that we do on this test board is the actual final test.
Uh-huh.
But it turns out that we do most of that offshore where the parts are assembled. So we send them, we put them all together, we end up with those individual pieces, and mostly they actually test them right there. It's all done at the same place. But all the tests are developed here. So we have these engineers that during the daytime, they're all figuring out how we make sure that the parts do exactly what the customers want. So all the test development is done here, and it's done pretty much all day long. At night, we actually do some production tests here. It used to be a big part of our testing. Now it's about 1%. It's just a very small part that we want to make use of them at night. Now, if we're lucky, we might actually be able to see some parts running here in a small camera. It's fun because they'll bring back the individual parts and they'll dump them into this bowl. If you look in there, you can see that they're moving around because that bowl is vibrating. And so it makes the parts go around on this track. And this track is set up such that it orients the part in a certain way. So if it's not right, it'll use these little air jets and shoot the parts off. And so by the time they get to the top, they're in the proper orientation and they'll go down this track here.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll go through that track in there where the light is shining. This is actually a camera that's looking at the part.
Mm-hmm.
So it verifies that the mark that we put on the top of the part is correct. So the marking is all inspected there. And then it uses that to do the final orientation. Because some parts, these ones in particular, are square.
Right.
So it can't mechanically decide what the orientation is. It can just get them all so that they're right side up,
mm-hmm.
basically. And then the vision tells them, okay, it needs to rotate or not rotate. So it will test the parts inside of here. And when it's done, it puts them on the tape and reel also. So a finished part of it comes up on these smaller reels here. So the testing is actually done at this station back here. You can see this board's got these wires that are going to this system that does the, well, it's not here. It's actually doing the test that looks pretty much like what happens in a phone. It could even be making like a pseudo phone call, but it's not actually contacting the base station. It's just transmitting and making sure that it's transmitting the right power. And we check to make sure that it's not interfering with adjacent phone calls and things like that. So it's a very extensive test, but you can see that it normally only takes a second or even a fraction of a second sometimes to do that test. But again, this is pretty much test development, not actually production. Because he's the guy that's developing the test. He's trying to make sure that everything we're doing is proper.
Right.
So these are probably more than likely samples for customers. So they'll only put like 50 parts on a reel or something, send them out to go to Wall-E or somebody, and they'll play around with them and say, yeah, that is what we want. That's usually what's happened, except for at night, then we do a little bit more production. So that's my other favorite thing, is to watch that bowl where it's sending those parts around the racetrack and getting them all in. Some of the parts are rectangular, so it can actually orient them even better than these square ones. But gets them all set up. And then we have these rooms that we call a screen room, where we can actually test the receiver parts. Mm-hmm. So if there's a part that's receiving things, we don't want the transmitters to interfere with those, and so they can be tested in here.
Well, if you took your cell phone into one of the other rooms, it wouldn't work. Because no signals from the outside world can get inside here once the door is shut.
Wow.
So it's really quiet in terms of all the noise that's out in the atmosphere, so we can make really sensitive measures. We don't care about those at all with the amplifier folks, but the receivers is a different story.
Right.
So that's the test floor.
I like it.
Different kinds of handlers that will handle all the different shapes and sizes of the parts. And like I said, at night it turns into more of a production versus engineering, which is pretty much what's going on, at least at that stage there. I mean, this is still pretty much production on this side here with measuring the individual die. So that's pretty much the tour. Is there anything else that you wanted to see or that you had in mind that you were thinking of?
No, I think that about covers it. And so there are people working in there 24 hours a day?
Yes.
Too?
Yes. Of things that we do. So here's an example of one of the parts that's on Mars.
Oh, wow.
So that's in the Sojourner rover, the first one that they put on Mars. We also have communication devices in the Spirit and Discovery rovers that are on Mars. And then we have a communication device that's on the Huygens probe that's on Titan,
wow,
orbiting Saturn. So we have, you know, spacecraft parts and satellite parts. So a lot of GPS and things like that are enabled by TriQuint parts, communication satellites.
Mm-hmm.
The folks that we have in Texas are specialists in building parts for defense and aerospace. So they build a lot of radar devices there. And so just all kinds of stuff. I mean, in the early years, that's what we were specialists at. And so we did a whole lot of different things, but in not very much volume, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we charged more money. So we get, you know, hundreds of dollars per part. Now it's 69 cents, right? So it's just an economy of scale, but the company really grew up as being a really diverse abilities in terms of the types of things that we could build.
Let me just...